The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin. In Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited for today's episode with Rebecca and Ben. I feel like we haven't had a couple on in a long time, and they're so sweet. And I'm excited to hear your thoughts on everything that they have to say. I think it's so important, the topic of humor in a relationship. I can't explain to you how important it is to be laughing with your significant other more than anyone else in your life. If they don't make you laugh the most, I would really reconsider. I'm not even kidding. It's so important, especially as new parents. You have to be able to laugh because things go wrong all the time. Things are stressful. If you can't, and also when you fight, you have to be able to break out in a laugh at the end of your fight. Otherwise, your fight's too serious, your fight's scary, and you don't want to be a scary fighter. You know what I mean? You got to find that humor. And I'm so happy that we have Ben and Rebecca on because they're comedy writers and they just get the humor thing. Anyway, we recorded this episode a little while ago. I think it was in November. So just telling you that. So if we talk about things that, were a little while ago, that is the reason. They had just gotten engaged when we recorded. And I'm so excited for you to hear everything that they have to say. So we're doing this really fun new thing where you can call in and leave your questions on voice recording. So the website that you go to is speakpipe.com/WeMetAtAcme. And that's where you can submit anything and everything, all the questions that you might have. Even if you just want to vent, go on there because I will listen to it. I get the emails directly to my personal email and it's really fun. I've been loving hearing your voices and I'm going to play, I guess we'll start with two and then we'll go from there and we'll get right into the episode. So let's see what this one has to say. I haven't screened it, so hopefully it's safe.
Hi, Lindsay. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about how not to compare your partner and your relationship, to your parents' relationship at your age, the financial part, the life stages part. I feel like often I'm comparing my relationship to my parents and I'm always reminded when we were 32, we had this and that. And for example, when my parents were my age, their kids were in private school and they had our forever home. They had three kids and it was the norm. Everybody had that. And now splitting rent is the norm, right? So I was just hoping you could give some insight into how not to compare your partner to your dad at their age financially, or compare your relationship stage, just because times are so different now and everything's so much more expensive. It's just so hard to remind yourself of that and not to, make your partner feel bad or belittle your partner in your own mind. And I was just hoping you could talk a little bit about that. I would really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. I love this. It's so relevant to what I'm going through. It's so relevant to, I hope, what so many people are going through. It's we are in a totally different world than when our parents were growing up, because first of all, the prices are astronomical today. And back in the day, it's if we had known what it would be, we would have all bought places when we were 12, but that's not the case. And so it's so important to just, first of all, recognize that it's not anyone's fault that the prices are the way that they are today. It's a totally different world. Second of all, it reminds me of this TikTok I saw recently where the boyfriend is building something and the girlfriend's texting her dad to be is he building it right? And it's who are you texting? And it's my sister. I don't know if you're a TikTok person and that's too niche, but it's we're always going to compare our partners to our parents, especially if, you know, we're like a daddy's girl and we really look up to our dad specifically. And our dad was like a really great provider for us. And, you know, and that's like what the gold standard is. So first of all, it's a good problem to have, but it's also a hard problem to have, especially if your parents have this, you know, everyone thinks having divorced parents is, you know, is like, so it ruins the way that you date and it casts a cloud, like a dark cloud over marriage. But also having parents who are in a very, very happy and successful marriage can put a lot of pressure on you to get to that point as well. And to, do you have this, you know, comparing like, oh, they have this like over the moon type of love. Like, do you have this? And first of all, it's built. Like our parents, when they were our age, they were probably going through the same, similar at least, stuff to what we were going through. They were fighting, they were splitting things, they were, you know, not, they didn't have as much as they had today. You have to keep in mind, your parents are like, you know, 50, 60, 70. They have lived a life and they have built that life. So the reason that it looks so seamless now is because of all the work that they've put in, because marriage is work and having a family is work. And, you know, when they had newborn kids, it was totally different. When they were starting out in their careers, it wasn't so immediate that they were successful, right? So you have to think about that. And maybe, you know, your dad got successful at 26 and maybe your husband or boyfriend is 30 and it's just happening a little slower for him, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And as long as you feel like your partner's ambitious and you're doing all the right things and taking all the right steps to get to a place and have a life that you really love, that's all that you can really do. And I know that it's so hard. I do the comparison game all the time, but really we just have to be patient, because that will happen for us. If we're in a relationship that we really are so happy in and we feel this like immense potential with our partner, not just potential, but future, that we're going to have this like great family and we're going to be successful and, you know, manifesting all the things, then it will happen. It's just really hard to like look over and see your partner and then like look over and see your dad, let's say, and you're like, wow, I wish you were there, but you're not yet. And it sucks, but you have to have the faith that they will be and you will be. And it's just, give it time, because it's a different world. And then for our kids, it'll be a different world. Like everything is just happening later. We're living longer and that's okay. There's no other, you know, there's nothing we can do about it, but have faith that we made the right decisions. And I'm sure you did. And, you know, again, a good problem to have, but it's also can be annoying to have parents who really love each other, you know, but I promise you, you'll get there and it is built. Okay. Moving on to the next one.
Hi, Lindsay. My name is Grace. I'm 25. I live in San Francisco. Love the pod. I'm a longtime listener. Wanted to get your thoughts around feminine and masculine energy in dating / relationships. I've been seeing a lot of content around it, and I know there are definitely some nuances to the topic, but as a Gemini and somebody who works a sales job, has an intense day-to-day, I definitely feel I lean more into my masculine energy most of my days, and would just love to get your thoughts on that dynamic in a relationship, if there's some truth to that, how important it is in dating, and if it affects a lot. I know that was a loaded question. Would just love to get your thoughts on that topic in general. Thanks so much.
Okay, first of all, thank you, Grace. Love you. It is a loaded topic. We have episodes that are actually dedicated to this exact topic. So if you just search in the podcast app, We Met at Acme Masculine, you'll probably find them. But of course, I'm going to address it now a little bit. I will say that it is important to lean into your feminine energy when you are dating. And I feel like I've talked about this recently, so if it's redundant, I'm sorry. But I want to answer this question. I feel like when I am working, or when I'm like at a networking event, or, you know, in my day-to-day life with friends, like I definitely lean more into my masculine. But when I'm with Steven, I almost have to make a conscious effort to lean more into my feminine, whether that's like asking for help opening a jar, right? or just being softer with him, being sweeter, more sensitive. And so I don't think it has to be this like grand gesture of changing, right? And I definitely don't think that you should change the way that you are at work and in the office. And, you know, if that's all working, that's amazing. But I think when we do, as women, when we go on dates with men, I think it's important to dial it back a little bit. And that doesn't mean that you aren't this amazing, strong woman. You still are, but just like making them feel needed a little bit goes a long way with men. And I feel like they are, you know, they're a lot more sensitive than we think. They're a lot more introspective than we give them credit for. And they want to feel like they are important and necessary to you. And sometimes when we have too much like toxic independence, when we're dating, we can inadvertently push them away. And so I do think it's important to lean into that. And that's also why I have the rules. Like the rules are perfect for if you are a working woman and you are masculine on your day to day, then the rules will help you lean into your feminine and let the man lead. So I hope that's helpful. And I'm so excited for you to hear this episode. Whether you're a new mom in postpartum or you're just feeling like you're in a shitty place in your life, or maybe you're going through IVF or fertility issues, whatever it is, you shouldn't have to go through it alone. Everyone gets down sometimes, and it is so helpful to do something about it, to get professional help. I can't explain to you how I feel when I leave a session with my therapist. It's like a whole new world. And if I could, I would get everyone to use therapy as a resource. There's no reason to wait until something really bad happens to get ahead of it and talk to someone. If you've never heard of Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with a licensed therapist from the comfort of your home, and you can message this therapist in between sessions. So you don't have to wait. You don't have to, you know, try to write down everything that happens and then try to remember it all at once. And then the day of, you are actually fine with the things going on in your life. And then, you know what I mean? Like, you can actually just talk to them whenever. It's secure and private. And as a listener of this podcast, you get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/acme. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/acme to get $80 off of your first month and to show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/acme. Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited to be here with Ben Kronengold and Rebecca Shaw. Rebecca and Ben are a comedy team who got their start writing for The Tonight Show. Their debut humor collection, Naked in the Rideshare, is due out on November 14th from HarperCollins, and it's gotten praise from Mindy Kaling, Will Ferrell, Nick Kroll, and Jimmy Fallon. They also are a couple who, after 9 years of dating, got engaged just last week. What an intro. Hi, guys.
Hello.
What an intro. Thanks for having us,
Lindsay. We're so excited to be here.
For being here. 9 years of dating.
Yeah.
True.
When you hear that someone described you guys as 9 years of dating and now engaged, are you like, fuck that? That's like rude. Or are you like, that's like amazing?
Honestly, I think there was a period there where we weren't really broadcasting the fact that we were dating. So I think there's still a teeny part of me that's like, wait, I don't know if people are supposed to know that
yet. Right.
Right. We work together. We write together. We got our start. Well, we met in college, but we got our start working in late night together. And we were a little protective over the nature of our relationship. So now it's fun to get to tell it to the world and celebrate this beautiful long relationship. Do you want to hold hands? I saw you reaching.
Hold hands for a second.
I thought you wanted
just
to
for
hold
a moment.
I misread
for
the
a brief
vibe.
Moment. Wait, let's see the ring. Let's see the ring.
Oh,
gorge!
I'm unbelievably happy. It's Ben's grandparents' engagement.
Wait, right? That's so special.
Isn't that really special?
That is really special.
Yeah. We have a. It felt almost faded. I think when we met, you know, we found out after we met, maybe right before we started dating, that our moms grew up together in Queens. Our grandparents were friends. It's a big Bayside triangle of sorts.
We're basically very lucky we're not related.
Yeah, very lucky. And no, who's to say that you're not?
I was going to say, the genetic testing has not cleared yet.
Yeah.
Actually, I had like a similar thing when I met my husband. Yeah. We found out our moms went to the same college.
Wow.
Which is a college near your college.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But is not quite an Ivy. It is Hartford.
Hartford.
And you guys met at Yale.
At Yale. Mm-hmm.
Which is fancy and nice. Is there like an equivalent? Mm. You know how Harvard has like the Lampoon, like, you know, funny people come from there. Is there an equivalent at Yale?
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that. There is less of an institutional base of comedy that, you know, there's a bunch of really fantastic comedians who came out of Yale, but less of sort of that Harvard Lampoon, you know, every year there's this group of people who are dead set on being professional comedy writers. But, you know, in our time there, we were very, very involved in the performance space, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Neither of us wanted to be performers. We still really avoided it at all costs, but we ended up both falling into sketch comedy. We got into two sketch comedy groups. We eventually ended up being the directors of the two groups, which was so much fun. Ben also did improv as well. Mm-hmm. But that really just became, you know, our major, more or less. It wasn't the thing that we, you know, academically were supposed to be focusing on, but it was the thing that we just found ourselves spending all of our time thinking about and doing.
Our parents were psyched, as you could imagine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
From Yale. But it is a really vibrant scene. And talk about Mindy Kaling. Mindy gave Rebecca some of the best advice you've ever gotten, which right before college, you met her in a chance encounter. You said, hey, I'm going. And she said, you got to do comedy when you go to school. The best kids are in comedy.
Yeah, that intersection
but
of
how
funny
did she know that you
smart.
Were funny, like, already? Or she
know.
Just said it?
It was her experience. It was like she was speaking to her college experience, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that, you know, she said that that's just where she found the most interesting, kind, fun-loving people. And we really found that to be the case. I mean, clearly we've been chasing the high ever since.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And I want to hear more about your kind of origin story as a couple. But before we get into that, what is, and, you know, we can start with Ben, what's your favorite romantic gesture?
There are so many. Well, college comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
I think Rebecca is so good at the big gestures, but she's also just so good at the small moments. Our love language in college was writing each other sticky notes. So we'd wake up to like a cup of coffee with a sticky note, with a little joke or a little pun. And we have all of them now. And when I proposed a week and a half ago, our apartment was laid out with the sticky notes that we've been keeping our entire relationship, which is, I think, writing in this weird way before we were ever thinking about doing it professionally in any capacity. It was a love language that we got to share, would you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it is, you know, just that ability to show, I thought a little bit extra about this thing. I did a little bit more. I spent a little more time on this to make sure you would smile in the morning. It meant so, so much early on. I thought you were going to talk about your little Valentine's Day tradition.
Oh, that could be your favorite gesture. It sounds like it might be.
It sounds like it's yours.
What started as my least favorite romantic gesture and then quickly became my favorite was our very first Valentine's Day. We were freshmen in college. And one of the a cappella groups on campus had this tradition where they would, you know, put themselves up as singing, you know, candygrams for hire. They'd show up at your door and, you know, serenade you with a song of their choosing. And Ben thought this would be a very sweet thing to have them surprise me and to have them surprise me in a class. Mm. Yeah, I think he thought it was going to be this sort of grand sweeping moment. So Ben contacted the a cappella group. They asked what song he would like to have them do. He picked the song My Funny Valentine, which
a classic.
A classic, right? Funny. I'm funny, I guess. Valentine's Day. It is Valentine's Day. And then what ended up happening in practice is that I was sitting in my bioethics lecture, which had about 500 people in it.
Oh, no.
The professor was in the middle of a lecture on abortion ethics.
Oof.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere in the back, I just hear a little soprano go, is there a Rebecca Shaw? And all of these like unbelievably chipper, lovely women come like traipsing down the aisles, interrupt the entire class to sing My Funny Valentine. Now, Ben had never heard the song before, but for those who haven't, the lyrics are incredibly offensive.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, it's like a funny looking woman.
Right.
Your looks are laughable, unphotographable. Uh-huh. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you smart? I know the lyrics now.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not.
I play it for him every morning.
Yeah.
But it was the most mortifying day of my life.
That is so funny. Wait, what did the professor do?
he had a really good sense of humor about it. He, as it turns out, was also in an a cappella group in college. Great. Go figure.
All these yellies. Yeah. They're just trying to sing.
But I did get him back pretty good.
How so?
Every year after that, on Valentine's Day, I hired the same a cappella group to interrupt whatever his biggest class of the year was.
As you should.
Yeah.
As I should. And I did. And I would sort of try to like increasingly escalate comedically. Mm-hmm. So like we got giant printouts of his face one year and they all walked in holding them.
Or, that's amazing.
It was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think sharing a sense of humor and a love of comedy, and even if it's at each other's expense in a small way, was an early through line of what connected us.
Yeah.
And now it's in a very lucky turn what we get to do professionally. Yeah. What do you say?
It's really true.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's going to be something that we are going to definitely dive into.
Can't wait. Uh-huh.
But so this was freshman year. So you guys have literally been dating since freshman year.
Yeah.
First week.
So how did it go down?
Mm-hmm.
We met actually at an accepted students meetup. So we met in March of both of our senior years of high school, which is bizarre. So we actually ended up being friends for something like 5-6 months before we started dating. I always feel really embarrassed when we're like, oh, when's your anniversary? And it's like, oh, it's August 25th.
Like by college math, it's like, what? Uh-huh. Like orientation.
Yeah, right. We hadn't unpacked our twin XL, but we were already.
Yeah. I don't know. We both grew up, Rebecca's grew up in the city. I grew up on Long Island. And I think we both had slightly faster high school experiences, maybe. I mean, we were not the coolest kids in town by any means. But I think that we, I don't know, lived a little bit of like a raucous life. And did you hear the Long Island come out with raucous? Lived a little bit of a raucous life. And when we found each other, we were like very conscious about, we could not do this yet. We could try to wait. But like, what day or moment would we want to have missed with each other?
Right.
And the answer was like, none of them, you know? So it was a really pure, great love story that we were trying to still salvage a really great college experience out of. So Rebecca's the most intentional person in the best, loveliest way, and was like, we are going to make other friends and we're going to have this big, vibrant college life for these next 4 years. And I think we ended up like doubling the friends that we made because you're friends with my friends. I was friends with your friends. We were in comedy. So we were still living, I think.
Yeah, we were very intent on not being the like, quote unquote, old married couple on campus.
Yeah.
It was really important to us that we like had a lot of fun too.
No, of course.
Yeah.
And like, thank God that you did, because I feel like that's crucial for like, you know, longevity. Mm-hmm. But I have to ask, I think I might have asked you this on the phone, but when are your birthdays?
Mm. Mine is October 27th.
October 21st.
Okay, so Scorpio Libra.
Mm-hmm.
Love that for you. Mm-hmm.
It's very annoying and codependent of us to have birthdays in the same week. It's really unpleasant.
But like, I guess I'm just so that was freshman year. Now you're 27.
Yeah.
There were no doubts along the way. And it's okay to say.
No,
pretend it's therapy. It's okay. Was there ever like a 1 week breakup?
Mm. No breaks. No breaks the whole way through. And no panicked moments, except I think in the hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And feel free to jump in here too. But I think we both had meta moments of like stepping out of it and being like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like neither of us, I think, pictured being like a one and done kind of college couple before we knew each other. Like, I don't think either of us was like, I can't wait to get to college and lock it down and not have, you know. So in the hypothetical, I think we had a few moments, certainly like at the end of college, where everyone was like, and, you know, are you going to take a break at any point? Like, I think we, in the abstract, those narratives start to seep in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to Ben's point, honestly, when we talked about, you know, that at the end of senior year, it was kind of the same as the end of the beginning of freshman year, when we were saying like, but what day would I want to miss?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have so much fun together that it's like to do something because it feels like the quote unquote right thing to do would be so antithetical to the way that we've, you know, lived our relationship up to this point.
Yeah.
But it was messy. I mean, I picture myself drunk in senior year crying. I'm like, so hook up with someone else. Just do it. I'll be here on the other side. And, you know, it'll be better for us in the long run. And Rebecca was like, that's so sweet of you, but I don't want to. You know, and it was a hard thing to fathom, I think, because of, I don't know, every relationship's different and some really legitimately do benefit from that. The joke on the tip of my tongue is, you know, we'll explode in 2 years and we'll both have to sleep with 40 people. But like, that's not true. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think that's true.
But what could you say?
Right.
If you are a long-term listener of We Met at Acme, you know my morning routine by now. You've heard me talk about it so many times, and you know that I wouldn't be the person who, you know, goes to the bathroom or even is like nice without my AG1 in the morning. I started drinking AG1 daily about 2 years ago now, and it has truly changed the game for me. I try, emphasis on try, to eat vegetables, especially during this pregnancy, and it's just not really working. It kind of grosses me out beyond measure. But the taste of AG1 is something that I've craved since I started drinking it 2 years ago. I remember at first I was like, this is a weird taste. And then like the very quickly like, oh, this is a taste that I need all the time. I don't know what it is, but if you drink AG1, you know what I'm talking about. It just tastes so good, especially when it's cold. I love to take a scoop of AG1 and mix it with cold water or some water with ice and then just stir with my metal straw. It's amazing. Every scoop includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support, magnesium and B vitamins for energy support, adaptogens to balance my body's stress levels, vitamin C and zinc to help support my immune health. I mean, you get it all. You get it all with one scoop. AG1 is a supplement that I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/acme. That's drinkag1.com/acme. Check it out. What can you say to people listening who are like, is it normal that I do have doubts or should I not have doubt? Like, just in terms of like, how did you know, especially knowing like so early, and obviously you guys are intelligent emotionally and like on paper as well. So maybe that helped. Right. But like, how did you know that? Was it less about like what's out there and more about just appreciating what's in front of you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I can speak for myself, at least. I definitely, especially freshman year, felt incredibly anxious about it. I think that as much as there is so much pressure to find someone, I think on the other side of that, there is such pressure of like, make your decision and like, no, but you should be having fun, or no, you should be doing this. And I think a friend of mine once said to me very early on freshman year, she's like, are you happy right now? Are you enjoying this? And the answer was yes. And she said, nobody's asking you to commit to marrying anyone right now. Like, you are allowed to enjoy a good thing without being anxious about something in 10 years from now. And I think that that was, for me at least, a very liberating thing, because I think it's easy to sort of question when something does feel so good. It's easy to be like, but what about when the shoe drops? Or what about, you know, if there's this problem, and what if that pans out down the line? And I think getting permission to live in the moment a little more really allowed me to just enjoy myself.
Right? Yeah. And so much of it has been so hard fought. I mean, nine years of a relationship, like, we've had more arguments and nights until that were, you know, where we're up until 5 a.m. trying to figure out something in our relationship than like,
oh, totally,
I ever could have imagined. But I think our communication is really strong.
Oh, totally. I mean, when we graduated, we were so lucky. We gave this graduation speech, and that's how we ended up getting signed with our agents. And we got hired on The Tonight Show based on that speech. Jimmy saw it, and he offered us the job as sketch writers. And it was this pretty quick transition away that was so lucky between like, oh, we want to write comedy professionally. That's the thing we want to do. We're giving this speech together because that makes sense in the moment. It's a bit about a couple who is deciding whether or not to break up at graduation. And then very quickly it was, hey, your big break is calling. You have to do it together. By the way, from here on out, you're working as a team. How does that sound to you? So I think that a lot of those growing pains that couples have when they enter the real world, when they, you know, figure out what their life looks like after college, we had in this like cramped office in 30 Rockefeller Plaza with no windows, which just fast tracked, I think, a lot of the fighting and then the conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm. But how is it possible then that other people didn't know you guys were dating if you were basically like hired as like a couple?
It's funny. The graduation speech that I think was the only thing people saw of us.
I need to see this speech.
We
got to
show it
like,
to you.
How have I not? I need this.
A lot of people watch it and they're like, clearly this is a couple. Mm-hmm. A lot of people watch it and they're like, clearly these are, you know, comedians doing a bit. So there's ambiguity, certainly, unless like, you know, for sure. I mean, Jimmy knew what the deal was. We made sure that he knew. The important people at like NBC Universal knew, but we made
it. We weren't doing anything profoundly sketchy.
But we made, again, I think speaking to this attempt that we always try to give to like, this is a potentially formative moment for our relationship. Let's try to go in with as much intentionality as possible and like make the decision. Let's not let a decision be made for us, even if that means being up until 3 and 4 or 4 in the morning, like, you know, sweating over what should we do about our relationship now being thrust into the workplace. We thought about it and we said, let's not make it our big thing. Let's, you know, there's already a weird asterisk next to us. We're very green. We're coming into this right out of college. That's already pretty weird. Let's not throw another layer onto it and say, hey, we're in this relationship, because as it turns out, the job is wildly collaborative. You need people to come into your office and want to pitch you a sketch idea or, you know, write something with you throughout the night. And we were worried about like, oh, I don't want a third wheel, you know, or
or like if we disagree on something creatively, right. If I don't think a joke is good, you would never want someone to be like, oh, lover's quarrel, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm going to give you some space. It's like it's a tough job. It's an intense environment, just 5 shows a week. And we were like, we don't want to give ourselves any disadvantages going in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they all just thought we were really codependent best friends or something. Mm-hmm. They would ask like what we're doing on hiatuses. And we'd be like, oh, I'm going to Boston. And Ben would be like, I also am going to Boston.
Uh-huh. No, you should hang out with Rebecca there.
Yeah.
She'll be there.
That's so
Ben,
funny.
Ben who?
I know.
Oh, right. Yes.
At a certain point we were like, is it a chemistry problem? Like, hopefully we just were able to code switch. But one thing that you said, Lindsay, that I want to touch on, like, I think that I would never want people to think, oh, you know, my perfect person must be out there and they have this perfect relationship, because I think we're in a very bright and sunny phase. We just got engaged 2 weeks ago.
Right. So let's hope.
But I think another message, when I would see friends in college, guy friends, you know, crying over girls or, you know, this girl like ended up seeing someone else, I'd sort of have this perspective that I think a lot of people get maybe later on in life, where I was like, that was never supposed to be your person, you know? And like, I'm so excited for the day that you find your Rebecca and you're going to be like, oh my God, that relationship, was that even a relationship?
Right.
And now I'm getting to see that happen, you know, with so many of my friends being like, oh, this is it. We just had that this is it moment early.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And like, you can't control that.
Totally.
I mean, I went to college with a boyfriend, like not same college, but from a high school relationship.
Yeah.
We both went to college and like our mindset was, we'll stay in this. And in my mind, I was getting married to him at one day. But you had said something really important, Rebecca, that your friend was like, are you enjoying this? Like, are you happy? I was not enjoying it, let me tell you. Like, it was such a role. Like, everyone he like took a photo with on Facebook, I was like, he's definitely hooking up with that girl, you know? And it wasn't fun. Like, it was not fun for me at all. And so, obviously, we ended up breaking up. Of course, he was all hooking up with that girl in the photo. But had that not happened, and had it been really enjoyable, and he were like was trustworthy and this and that, I don't see why I wouldn't have. You know what I mean? Like, that just wasn't the situation for me. But like, it was for you. It was for some people that I know. Like, you never know when your timing will be.
Absolutely.
But I feel like if you're one of those people who go into college and you're like, I'm going to meet my person freshman year orientation, you won't.
100%.
Like, it has to like really sneak up on you or not at all.
Yeah, it has to find you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Yeah.
You are. So, okay. Something that I really wanted to talk about was, I did this event the other night. And it was like a dating workshop. And we did this activity, which was like, make a list of your needs versus your wants. Your wants versus your needs for a future, like potential partner. And needs are like things you really need, right? Mm-hmm. Like you need them to be like compassionate.
Right.
You need them to be kind, whatever. And wants are like more like you need them, like you want them to be tall. Mm-hmm. You want them to be, you know, I don't know, have good teeth.
Yep.
Sure. But like, you know, that can be fixed. Anyway, so I noticed that on everyone's want list was like sense of humor, but not on their needs list.
Interesting.
Which any boyfriend that I've had, and I've had a few, who there wasn't like a comment, like we didn't have a shtick, and like they weren't the one person in my life making me laugh more than anyone else in my life, that relationship failed.
Yeah. Totally.
And I truly think that it's because there wasn't like, and I'm not saying that they have to be like a comedian, right? Mm-hmm. But I need to have more fun with them, laughing more with them than I do with my best friends. Maybe equal, but like, you know, at least at the same level.
At least a different kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. Because otherwise, like, you know, you're spending like 79 or more percent of your life with this person. Like one-on-one, you have to be able to like laugh. Like if you have kids, you have to find the humor in the fact that the kid like painted the wall, whatever it is, you know, like. I'm shocked. And like, do you feel like there's a pattern? Obviously with you there is, but with your friends and the relationships that you think are good and your friends and things like that, where like there's a humor, there's a shtick.
Oh, I totally do. I mean, it's so funny. I was just talking about this with someone the other day. I was like, the thing that nobody tells you about dating is like, life can be so boring. And if you're stuck with someone who bores you even a little bit, it's just like, it's just the worst decision you could possibly make because it just feels
and the biggest.
And the biggest, totally. Mm-hmm. Like the ability and everyone's sense of humor is different. To your point, they don't have to be comedians, but to not have someone who shares that same sense of joy and fun as you, whatever that sense may be, it's like that's a lot of groceries to buy by yourself or like a lot of TV to watch without wanting to know what your partner's opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely agree with that. That is so interesting. I wonder if what they are interpreting as sense of humor is like a proxy for a bigger thing of like shared values. And Ben, we were just talking about this on the way over, but I think the other side is also just as important, which is, you know, not having someone who has the wrong sense of humor.
Oh my God. The wrong sense of humor is awful. Like, and every now and then, like my husband will show me a video on YouTube and I'm like, that's not funny.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Right. Yeah,
totally.
Like you can't, you know, you're not going to think everything's funny, but if he was like sending me unfunny memes all day, like that would actually be a red flag, I think.
Yeah.
I agree.
There's definitely an individual, you know, sense of humor in both partners, I think. But your collective has to be just as joyful. Rebecca thinks the funniest thing in the entire world is animals with human personalities.
It's so embarrassing.
I don't find that funny at all. I
swear we're humorists and very intellectual, but yeah, nothing in the world will make me laugh harder than like, that dog has a job.
That's true.
My favorite thing in the world.
I like people falling. Rebecca doesn't.
You need, thank you for your bravery.
You need those silos for your like, cackle to yourself at night. But to your point, Rebecca, like we spend so much time watching TV. I mean, that's our world. That's our business. But like the hardest we laugh at television is when you pause and you're like, you know, doing a bit about the characters or making fun of someone on screen or being like, that is your mom for this and that reason. You know, that
kind
of
thing.
Not a your mom joke in the classic sense, but in the nuanced sense. and I think it's like our relationship. I don't know if you were just observing us, if you'd be like, those are comedy writers. But like, you know, we don't put the pressure.
Yeah, I don't know if we're like overly funny in our day.
Yeah, I don't think we're the most like on people ever. Like we're not stand-ups, we're not performers. But like so much of our relationship is colored by just belly laughter. And I think it's a really important, to your point, as you have kids and things get difficult, to come back to a source of like joy at the core of a relationship is really crucial, I think.
Yeah. I think on the other side too, like the shticks that you can fall into with your partners that are negative really stick. You know what I mean?
Like, give me an example.
Like we were talking about and the like year leading up to getting engaged, it was, you know, we'd just turned 26, 27. It was right around the time when everyone started asking us, like, so when's it gonna happen? You guys have been together for so long. And we genuinely had never been a couple who was like super gung-ho on the idea of like, and we're going to get married and this and that. So it wasn't something that we were really talking about. But right around the time when people started asking, they were only asking Ben. It was really the sense of so when are you going to, you know, make an honest woman out of her? Not literally saying that. But it was so interesting to me that it was like the assumption was Rebecca's waiting around. She's upset that Ben hasn't asked her yet. She's ready to say yes when he does. And poor Ben, like, like he doesn't want to be in that position. So when people would ask Ben early on, I hope it's okay to...
Totally. No, it's true.
Well, do you want
to... I mean, I would... The jokes that I would make to try to disarm the situation were things like, not anytime soon, or ask me again in 10 years, or, you know, the equivalent of like, she's begging me. Or like maybe a funnier version of that was like... and a meaner one was like, well, you know, could be soon, but who knows who I'll propose to. Yeah. Just these things that like, that's not even my sense of humor, I'd like to think. Right. But it's like, you're trying to take the air out of a situation.
Like a Catskills comedian in the 70s.
I turned into like Rodney Dangerfield. And it was, because it's not your best friends who are asking you. It's like someone you're meeting at a bar or like.
Right. And it's not like you mean it. It's just like,
no,
oh, it's a one-off.
My husband would say the same kind of things. And like, actually, it would piss me off sometimes, to be honest.
And Rebecca was like, and it's something that we talked about, like at a few different important turning points in our relationship. But it's like, what kind of jokes are we making? And like, how can we make them not at each other's expense?
Right.
And how could we be like, you know, find the comedy writers in us to be like, how could we be more surprising than that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just the easy joke. So what it ends up turning into.
Well, Ben would just do a lot of like, I've been asking her constantly, can you reason with her?
I've been begging her.
Yeah, it was just a little more surprising and like gave her a little bit more, I don't know,
like
existence.
Autonomy.
In a space that people just didn't come to.
Totally.
But that is such a good call that you made about people just assuming that like the women are waiting around.
Yeah.
And I am so guilty of that. So we have like in our friend group and like our larger friend group, there's this couple. They're so great and like both very funny, actually. And they live in LA and we were all at a wedding and I'm closer to him than to her. And they've been together probably as long as my husband and I have been together, but they're not engaged. And so, you know, that's like 4+ years, which is, you know, when you're like in your 30s, like assumed like you're going to get engaged.
Yep.
And so I went up to him. I can't even use the drunk excuse because I don't drink. But I went up to him and I was like, okay, when are you proposing? Like, this is ridiculous. It's like, it's enough already. And he was like, to my actual like jaw-dropping surprise, he was like, she doesn't believe in marriage. So like, talk to her about it. And I was like, like, I can't believe that I just... was that person who just like made that assumption and like went right for it to like be mad at like my guy friend.
Totally.
When I had no idea.
Yeah.
And then like, it was just, I was so taken aback. I was like, you just never think that.
Yeah. 100%. And listen, I am not anti-meddling. I am very pro. We should all be meddling in our friends' relationships constantly. It's my passion and my joy. But yeah, it was just interesting how in these moments, like, I feel like we are so often on the same playing field. We work together. And suddenly people were like, Ben, TikTok.
We make a lot of decisions together. And I think we've avoided a lot of things that couples post-grad fall into, like jealousy of each other's careers. We've never had that. It's been the same career.
Right.
Or one person works a lot more and that, you know, you can't spend time together in a meaningful way. We're only together, you know? So it felt... I think with us in a lucky way, like we're gendered things, there's more of a spotlight on them because we're so co-equal in a lot of ways. And this was a weird one that I wasn't quite prepared for. And I needed a punch-up writer basically on my initial jokes.
But I
was just going to say, I feel like with our friends and their relationships too, maybe it is the comedy writers in us, but you sort of notice the jokes people are making. And in the same way that they say, you know, there's truth behind every joke. I don't know if that's really true, but... the sort of the shticks that couples fall into of like, you know, there's this sort of more old fashioned like, oh, I hate that guy, or, you know, just putting your partner down in front of other people.
Oh, I hate that. It's I really
so
hate that.
Yeah.
And like, I've experienced that in past relationships.
Totally.
And anytime Steven, my husband, has made some sort of like joke at my expense, like, and it's not that it happens often, but anytime he's done it, and it's usually when he's like uncomfortable.
Always.
Like, it's only when he's uncomfortable, when it's like, my friends that like he barely knows or something. Yeah. And I'm just like, I always will talk to him after and be like, I know you were joking, but like never say that again. And he's like, okay, yeah.
Like, yeah. That's such a balanced and I think perfect way of looking at it because it's like, it's never, I don't think in my experience, like intentional or like, you know what I really want to do is put you down. It's coming from a place of like, I don't know this person that well, probably.
Yeah. You're just no grasping idea what I'm for doing. A joke and the low hanging fruit.
They said something awkward. Yeah. I'm going to hang out with Steven because I'm doing that a lot too. Yeah. You try to put someone else at ease. But I think for a relationship, it's really important to stay together, to sort of like unionize and be like, we can put people at ease in a lot of different ways,
right.
But it can't be at each other's expense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're totally right, Rebecca, though. There are so many shticks. There's the girl being like, oh, I can't believe I have to have sex with this guy. And the like sexless shtick.
Yeah.
Right. Which like that is not the healthiest things fall into
totally.
Either.
It's another way of throwing your partner under the bus. Being like, they're not good in bed and, you know. Mm-hmm.
Or like the competence thing that you always talk about. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about that because we found ourselves falling into that.
And, oh,
yeah.
Like he's so incompetent.
Yeah, I do everything around here. Right, like you don't even know how to stack the dishes. And it's like, we were 17 when we met. Like we know how to stack the dishes, but there's like a lot of shit we learned around
it's
the same time.
It's also just awkward. Like when you go out to dinner with these couples and like their shtick is so like, you know, antagonistic and like against each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I laughed like the first time, but now I'm feeling a little weird about this.
And I found myself doing that. I would sort of make a joke or two at Ben's expense being like, I'm the one, you know, keeping this afloat. And finally he, you know, whatever.
I said, you sit down in that chair.
You sit down.
Your trouble chair.
I put on my dunce cap and he was saying, he's like, you know, I'm starting to feel incompetent.
Right.
It's not just about how other people are seeing us, but I'm starting to feel like I shouldn't be, you know, I'm not able to do things because like that is our dynamic. So let's just sort of push a reset button and figure out how to reset the dynamic to like, we're both figuring this out together.
And teach me how to use the dishwasher.
And he's getting so good at it.
I'm getting really close.
That's really funny. It's funny because my, like our situation, so my husband is probably, if he wanted to be, if he put his mind to it, he could be more domestic than me.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I'm admitting this, but he taught me, I knew how to do it, but he taught me how to do laundry like properly.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I know and I do it, he's like, I never knew how to do it. What do you mean? Like I never taught you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's become our shtick and like, it's funny and it's like, it's cute, but like, obviously, sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm running out. Like, you know, can you switch like the washer to the dryer and stuff? And he's like, no, like, I don't know how. And it is annoying because like he takes it too far, but
We always say competence is a zero sum game where like if you're in a relationship or a weekend get together with six friends, there's one person who knows how to like change the input on the TV and turn on the stove and like everyone else goes to zero.
Right.
It's this weird phenomenon. So there's only one trusted person and that confidence allows them to do something and no one else can do all this.
Totally. But I have to ask you guys, because you work together, because you've been together for so fucking long. How do you feel like, how do you ever feel independent in your relationship? Like what do you do to like maintain that independence? Does it have to be this like intentional, like conscious thing where you're like, I'm going on like a girl's weekend, like I need to, like I kind of need to get like away from you, or even just like I'm intentionally making, you know, three plans with this like every week with like guys and friends and whatever.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think you already hit the nail on the head. We have really good friends. And I think one thing that was nice about deciding, even when we started dating really early on, that like that was not going to be the end of our social life, was that we've really accumulated this wonderful group of people who we adore, many of whom are our mutual friends, but a lot of whom are people who, you know, they're really a part of my life and Ben adores them as well, or vice versa. So I think that we spend more time with other people than the average couple does in the evenings, on weekends, because we're just so intentional about, you know, we need to have other things to talk about.
We've always been really honest about like the assumption from the jump has been like we are best friends, sure, but like friends serve an entirely different purpose and like fill an entirely different need. And when we graduated, it's so hard to be a post-grad and like you lose your community, you move back home. It's not like we were able to, you know, we weren't in consulting. We weren't able to afford living in the city right away. That wasn't really our beat. We weren't sure if we were going to be in LA or New York. And the first thing we said when we sat down with our agents, they're like, all right, so this is it. Like, do you want to have a TV show? Do you want to be on late night? We were like, this is crazy. Like, do you have any friends that you could introduce us to?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and we always joke with them about like, they had to build our social lives too and try to introduce us to young people in the industry because we didn't have friends in our careers, like a class of people that we were starting with at a company. So we really don't take friends for granted.
Oh, yeah.
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 But you had friends from college that moved to the city.
Yeah, they sort of trickled in, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had a few that moved right out of school who had sort of scattered to different industries. But it was sort of being very intentional, again, about saying, who are my people here? Who am I going to see on a week-to-week basis? Who are the people I can complain to work about? Because my partner isn't really someone I should complain to work about.
Right.
Because that's a great way of getting stuck in a super negative rut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it became almost more essential to us because it's like we need to hear about other lives. We need to hear about other industries. We're writing and we're writers. And it's like, what are we going to write about if our lives are so similar?
And also, like, we just lose perspective easily. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something we've learned over time. Like, if a pitch doesn't go exactly the way we want and I walk out of it being like, well, that was a disaster, and my partner right next to me is saying, yes, that was a disaster. And like, we can spend all night being like, the world has ended, nothing good will ever happen again, and we're all done. And,
right.
You know, just like spending 1 minute with someone else who's like, my cat is sick, is enough to be like, okay, right. And like,
I am not
the center of my universe. Uh-huh. So
I'm curious, like, especially Ben, from your perspective, you guys, you know, have friends who are getting into serious relationships, like starting, maybe obviously didn't start as young as you, but like, what are you seeing that are like the issues, like from, let's say, guys that you're friendly with, especially because I know that women listening like want to know, and they also are thinking like, are there good guys anymore at all?
Yeah. I mean, I'm noticing a little bit of a like self-defeating confidence problem at right around our age, 27. I think there are some amazing guys in my life that are on the market. But there's like a little bit of insecurity when they're looking around and seeing most of their friends are in relationships now, and they kind of get a little hard on themselves, or they put a lot of pressure on themselves, you know, on these first dates or second dates. And like, it's a bit of a pity because I wish I could say to them, like, your value and your self-worth is like, if anything, only skyrocketing. Like, you have, you know, infinite potential to meet your person right now. But I think that there's a little bit of a looking around and being like, is it me? And it's like, no, it's not you. It's just the timing's not right yet. You know what I mean?
That's also how people end up getting weird on first dates. Like, the higher the pressure feels.
I know. That's why I'm always like, give it at least two. Like,
totally.
Everyone's weird on a first date.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much of like, hey, you know, I would like to bring a plus one to this event because like, I want to feel like I'm there with my guy friends who are in relationships. And it's like, oh, that's not the event to bring that person to. Like, we want to, you know, we love more than anything meeting someone that someone's dating. But it's like, if I were writing your relationship, I don't know if that's the right move. So I think it's a lot of panicking, and I think it'll go away. I think our older friends who are in their 30s and still single, like, they find themselves again and they regain a sense of confidence that allows them to make fewer chaotic decisions. Yeah, chaotic decisions and decisions from a place of fear. But I think there's like a 27, 28 rut of guys just like being a little down on themselves.
Interesting.
We need to care for them.
Yeah,
these
for
sweet,
real.
Sweet, soft
they
boys.
They need therapy. Yeah. How do you guys like find inspo when you're writing about dating in your 20s? Because you didn't really do that.
It's all our friends. I mean... It is really the question, and I think sometimes a little bit of a blind spot for us, but luckily we've had enough friends who have had enough questions and problems and complaints and funny stories that we've sort of saturated up that way.
Yeah, but we're really deliberate about it. I sat my guy friends down at dinner the other night, and I'm like, I'm going to buy our next round, but the entire round has to be you guys telling me about your dating stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I only have Rebecca, and we have a few projects where we need to inject some sex and single life into it. And so focus groups, like, we try to approach this very artsy, you know, and nebulous career with the same kind of intentionality that we would have approached like grad school or these careers that our parents thought that we were going to
still
be doing.
Deep down think we're going to pivot into.
Still hope for. And, you know, I think we saw that in each other early on. We're like, all right, we're both hardworking and we're not going to fuck around just because this industry could be fun. We're going to
make it not fun.
Yeah,
I know, but we're going to try to work our butts off and get data. Like you just try to ask your friends so you can collect the stories and the anecdotes.
Mm-hmm. And now we're looping back around again and everyone's like ethical non-monogamy. It's the place to be, apparently.
I did a whole episode on that with this guy who's great, Dan Savage.
Mm.
And he, you know, is involved in it.
Mm.
But I'm just, I don't know if I'll ever.
We feel so, we've never felt like older and stuffier.
Lamer.
Than us being, yeah, lamer.
Yeah.
And just being like, not for us. And someone said to us the other day, oh, vintage.
Yeah.
Vintage.
Well, it's like how that new Mean Girls is coming out
mm-hmm.
and like being popular is actually like not cool.
Yeah.
It's like it's a bad look to like, you know, be like the cool girl
totally.
In school
totally.
Now.
I know when they said it's not your mother's Mean Girls,
yeah.
I just collapsed into a small fetal position.
I felt so attacked.
Yeah. That one hit me like right in the ovaries
mm-hmm.
somehow.
So tell me a little bit about Naked in the Rideshare. Mm. Like what, you know, what can we expect?
Yeah, Naked in the Rideshare is our humor collection. It's short comedic stories, mostly fiction with a few nonfiction pieces in there. And
is this a book or?
It's a book.
Okay.
We wrote a whole book, which I still kind of can't believe. But yeah, I mean, Ben and I both really, our early humor education was largely comedic fiction. We love Simon Rich. We love Mindy Kaling, Issa Rae, David Sedaris. Exactly. And when we were on The Tonight Show, one thing that we sort of kept coming back to was, you know, those pieces and really wanting to contribute a little bit in that field in our own small way.
I was just going to say, you don't see a lot written about what it's like to be in your 20s right now by people mm-hmm. who are in their 20s. I think you see a lot of shows on, you know, networks that are like hashtag group chat. And it like lasts for six episodes. And
and
we wanted to write something that was as outrageous and honest and messy as the stories that we hear about our friends all the time. But like these stories are weird and heightened and super raunchy. So like instead of a story about two female friends trying to make it in their careers, it's that. That's how we start off. And then one of them gets a call that the College of Cardinals got together and they elected her the next pope. And the other friend is like, I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh God, they were on the same track and then one of them shot ahead, which we've all been there. We've all experienced that.
It becomes the story about when you feel like you're on the same page as your friends and all of a sudden one of them becomes more successful and feels more grown up and, you know, navigating that jealousy. And
all
of a sudden she's like flying to the Vatican and, you know, applauding while her friend takes her papal rights and being like sitting next to her mom and being like, yeah, I'm still interning, but it's going really well. Like using weird big swings to tell stories that feel like what it really feels like right now.
Yeah.
And really generational, I hope.
Yeah.
But right, to your point, Rebecca, one of the things that HarperCollins, our editor, pushed us to do was like, tell us a little bit about yourselves. And our instinct was like, who cares about like ourselves? But our sort of concession to them, our compromise was instead of telling a story about, you know, dating or working with celebrities, for instance, we have a chapter that's the hypothetical contract that we wrote up in the event that after working with Ryan Reynolds, he asked us to have a threesome.
Mm.
So it's like the real legality of getting into that and what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do.
We have a yes disclosure policy. We got to tell everyone immediately.
Yeah, you must
tell
everyone.
But that's actually a good question. I'm going to ask you some rapid fire. But if you had the opportunity to have a threesome with like your celebrity of choice, but you had to sign an NDA, you can literally never tell anyone about this threesome for the rest of your life. Is it worth it to you?
Mm, what a good question. I mean, I think as long as we are allowed to continuously talk about it, we spend enough time together that would be like 90% of our conversations. And I think that would be really exciting for us.
Yeah, I would say yes.
Yeah.
Same reason.
Yeah, grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it interesting.
Keep it interesting. All right. These are some rapid fires. You know the drill. Just basically yes or no's.
Is it weird that your fiance's mom still likes her like, sorry. So, so like Ben's ex's pictures. Yes or no?
Yes.
Same if yes. Worse. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just like one of those, you know, moms who likes everything.
It's more important to me that Ben's mom likes me than that he likes me.
But she likes your stuff too.
Yeah, but I'm supposed to be the only woman in her life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're big in-law loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fanatics, yeah.
I agree. Do you like watching people make their beds?
Like as ASMR? Or?
Yeah, like in a YouTube.
Oh, I don't think I've ever stumbled upon that.
Okay.
Have
That's
you?
One of mine. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like
Especially
it
Especially when you make up. Just kidding. Those are the kind of jokes we don't make.
Those are the jokes we don't make.
Why? Because Roger just, doesn't make the bed?
No, just gendered stuff.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see. I see where we went.
It somehow ends up being made by the end of the day.
By me.
Okay, so you've been on a few dates, or imagine, you know, your friends have been on a few dates with someone. Huge lifestyle differences. The girl is much more bougie and traditional. The guy is more divey and off the beaten path. Can it work, or is it doomed?
I think it could work.
Me too.
Yeah. Mm. I think as long as she likes that about him and he likes that about her, I think that intersection it's very on brand right now. It's very trendy.
They'll both get into like art or something in between.
Do you think it's better that way than the guy being bougie and the girl being off the beaten path?
Yeah, I don't trust a bougie guy.
Yeah.
Odds are I don't trust a bougie guy compared to a bougie girl.
Yeah. Right. No, yeah. I agree.
I think that's a fair take.
Have you ever gone to the movies by yourself? Yes or no?
Yes.
Love it. Me too. It's my favorite thing. Would you freeze embryos?
Oh, okay, we just went there.
We pivoted.
That is so funny.
With a serious significant other, if you were sure they were the one, but you were not engaged or married.
That is so funny. You should ask that. I just went to a fertility doctor 2 weeks
ago.
I think you are the second and third through 10,000th person who will now know that.
That's amazing.
But they were asking about that. They were really pushing in the direction. This was right before we got engaged. And they were saying, well, you know, that's the thing to do. You should freeze your embryos. And I suddenly got a little creeped out by it.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. It's amazing the tech is there. But I was like, I don't want
you're 27,
five kids you're sitting in Midtown somewhere. Right.
Whereas I was like, we should of course do that.
Right. Yeah,
let's
do it
tomorrow. I knew that we were going to get engaged in
a
week.
He's like, all I have to do is jerk off into a cup. Why shouldn't I do that
most days. But I knew that we were going to get engaged in a week, and I couldn't give up the surprise. Rebecca was like, we're not even married yet.
Right,
I'm like, you don't even know what I have planned.
If only you knew.
I'm still down to do it.
Yeah.
I was and I am.
All right. Got to revisit. Yeah. Does your significant other ever deny you cuddles?
Oh. Yeah, I would say like, we try not to go to bed angry, but I think that we try not to, you know, fight until 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. So I think we've had times where we reach a detente and we're like, I love you. It's going to be fine. We should both get some sleep.
Right.
But this is not going to be like a heavy spoon. But I guess that wouldn't be one person really pursuing and the other shoving away.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do two more. Mm-hmm. Do you feel gross after eating red onion?
Oh, like for the breath?
For the breath, and like sometimes you get a little tired, you know?
Huh. I don't know that I do.
Not one of my things either.
Yeah.
Correctly. I feel like.
Okay, and last one. Okay, you've been seeing a guy, for a few months, things are going really well, but you start to get irritable with them and you want your space after spending 2 days together.
Mm.
Red flag or normal? You've only been seeing each other for a few months.
Oh, interesting. I think the test is, can you sit in silence and get less annoyed at them again? Because I think there's such a thing as feeling overstimulated by someone.
Right.
But if their physical presence is giving you the ick, then it's time to move on.
Good call.
I have that with friends a lot lately. Like weekends with friends, I'm like, oh God, I gotta get away from you. I think it's natural. I think it's normal. And then the more time you spend, you sort of like increase the stamina that you can spend with a person. So I'd say keep pursuing.
But we're big proponents of parallel play. Mm-hmm. We're like, we don't need to be talking all the time. I can be scrolling. Yeah. You can be scrolling. So
love that. And hate anyone who is against that in a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That like, oh my God, I dated someone who needed like the look me in the eyes every time we're together. Like
too much
longingly.
Pressure.
Yeah.
It's never happened.
What void are you trying to fill?
Yeah. Right.
Like, a year in, Ben finally admitted that his favorite website is one of those like WWE analysis pages. And he was like, I keep angling the computer away from you and I need you to know.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I feel like we've learned how to enjoy our own space.
As you should. I love it. This was so much fun.
So much fun.
Can you guys leave me with a quote or piece of advice? Maybe it's something from the book. Maybe it's just something that you know, your grandma told you that you've kept in your existence.
I'll start and solve for time. mine is our first chapter in the book, which is one of my favorites, is called We'd Kill Each Other. And it's based on the idea that, you know, when we tell people that we work together, we always hear, oh, if my partner and I work together, we'd kill each other. And the way we do it is this funny sort of heightened thing where it's, you know, imagining what would happen if we two out of shape comedians in good faith decided to try to kill each other. And it's all of the Pilates that I quit halfway through and trying to slam him across the table and this and that. And what we end the chapter by saying is, you know, all of this is obviously a joke, but the main reason it's a joke is because when you're in a serious relationship, there's so many versions of working together. And all of what you do on a day-to-day is these negotiations, sometimes big, sometimes small, learning how to fight well, learning how to make up and say, I don't care enough about this and I love you. So I think what I would say is that in, you know, our 9 years together, what we've realized is it's all kind of the same. And some people work together and some people don't, but the ability to push through the world together, I think, is kind of consistent throughout.
Love that.
And I would say, as much as I don't want to portray our relationship as perfect, and I hope that we got to show the light and the shade in this conversation, I want to end on a little bit of a note of people that are a little bit unsure. Try to find your Rebecca. Try to keep pushing. And, you know, if you're Steven, find your Lindsay. And, you know, if you're me, find your Rebecca, because I think we're all kind of deserving of a very timeless classic love story. And I think there is someone out there for everyone that can achieve that kind of special relationship.
Well, I'm so making embryos with you.
Okay, that's a yes.
Thank you guys so much. Oh, where can everyone read your book?
Naked in the Rideshare is out on Amazon, HarperCollins, your favorite local bookstore for pre-order, and will be out on the 14th.
Awesome. Thank you so
much. Thanks, Lindsay.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.